stay tuned for The Lynn Show. If you've been listening to the last couple of shows, you know that I've been airing interviews that I've done with musicians at the 11th Newport, California Marriott Jazz Party. Today, I'm airing an interview with Graham Dechter, who is almost certainly the youngest musician at this event. At 24, Graham is already not only remarkably talented, but successful jazz guitar player, playing with his heroes, people he grew up listening to, as you'll hear him say towards the end of the interview, and not only holding his own, but as you'll hear in some of the cuts I play from his CD, leading. So, hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from
is about discovering the person you might have been if you hadn't been encouraged to discourage that person and pretend that you were someone else. Oh my God, what a convoluted sentence. And what does that mean? Well, of course, if you've been listening, you know what that means. And if you haven't, I'll try and explain. I'm a psychotherapist, and my clinical and also my personal experience suggests that for almost all of us, childhood is a time when we are ourselves, we do whatever comes naturally to us, and some of these things go down really well with our family, and some of these things don't. And depending on the family that we have, and how important it is to our particular parents that we be a particular way, we can get when we do get messages about what is okay and what is not okay to do within the context of our particular family system. So if you were born into a system where girls were supposed to be quiet, you know, the conventional feminine behavior, and boys, it was all right for boys to act out, it was all right for boys to be boys, then a rambunctious girl, a girl with a lot of energy, a girl with a lot of passion, an intense girl, might hear in that circumstance that that was not okay. And so she would be discouraged from being herself. And flexible as all of us are as children, she would learn so early how to dampen down what was natural to her, what was actually who she really was. Now, what we are so clever to do as children is first we figure out how, well, first we can't do anything about it. We express these aspects of ourselves, and there they are. And then we get the idea that that's not okay. And again, there's a range of ways that we can hear this. You can just get, no, no, no. Or, as a client of mine often hears, ah, that's you, which is always said with the tinge of that's not an okay thing to be. It can also be the subject of humiliation, embarrassment, criticism, ostracism, and in some cases, punishment and abuse. In any case, the minute that we are able, we figure out a way to pretend that this is not so of us. And after a certain amount of this is not so of us pretense, we forget that it ever was so of us. And so we become someone who has lost a part of ourselves. Now, because we don't know that we've lost this part, we are, as the clinicians say, in denial for that part of ourselves. We don't have awareness of it. We don't necessarily miss it. But I believe that a certain amount of energy is spent suppressing these parts of ourselves, and that we are robbed of that energy, of not only the energy, but also of the capacity. There's always the sense that something is missing, something is lacking, something is wrong. You hear people talk all the time about the feeling that if you only knew me, the feeling that I am somehow pretending, that I'm a fraud, and that if I let myself be known, you wouldn't like me. What this usually is the unconscious recognition that there is a part of oneself that one is ashamed of, that one wishes wasn't there, but nonetheless knows is there. So there's always this sort of tug of war for people, for, well, pretty much everybody, who has had to hide important, and of course it depends on what it is you've had to hide. If you've had to hide your intelligence, for example, that can really damage a life. If you've had to deny your robust health, believe it or not, there are parents who are only comfortable with children that they can care for, children who need them. And such children learn quite early to be dependent, to be needy, to be sick. So you can see how damaging this can be, depending on what it is you had to deny. So this show is all about making that point and encouraging anyone who listens to think, are there aspects of myself for which I am in denial? Do I know? Are there things I always wished I was? Are there things that other people in my family are that I wished I was? I talk about this in every show, sometimes more, sometimes less. And I write about it in my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And you can get information about the book and me, and also listen to previous podcasts in which I've talked about this at more length than I'm going to do today. And the website is thelynshow.com. THELYNNE. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. SHOW.com. thelynshow.com. And you can find out about the book. You can find, there's a workbook that goes with it and also an audiobook. You can find out about the kind of psychotherapy practice that I do. You can listen to the old shows and more. So the other thing that I do in my shows is I do a series called Anatomy of an Artist. It's an interview series where I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And as I say every week, I do this because when you are making your living or your life with an art, at least in that area of your life, you have to be exactly who you are. Because we do not live in a culture that encourages people to immerse themselves in the art of their choice. And so in order to do that, it has to really be who you are. And you have heard, if you've listened to any of these interviews, the challenges that come with having chosen an art to which to give your life, and the dedication and almost the feeling of not having a choice that people who do that make. And when you listen to this, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. No guile, no dissembling, no pretending. This, what you hear is what you got. And today, I'm airing an interview with Graham Dechter, who was so lucky. Graham was born to two musicians, a singer and a dad. His mother is a singer and his father, an arranger for films, composer, arranger for film. So when little Graham began to sing along at the age of two, it was not a surprise, and no one said, "What are you doing? Who do you think you are? Why are you doing that?" They smiled and encouraged him to be who he is. And who little Graham was a musician from virtually day one. So finding the instrument to which he finally gave his life, that wasn't as simple. He had to experiment. He had to find things that didn't and didn't work. It's an interesting story, but please, as you listen to Graham talk about how he discovered the instrument, as I say, to which he has given his life, listen to the way he always knew what worked and what didn't work, which is to say, he always had permission to say, "This is me." Listen to it and see if somebody inside of you is jumping up and down saying, "Me, me, see me, know me, be me." In addition to the interview that I'm playing of Graham's, I'm going to play at least two cuts from his album, Right on Time. And I'm going to start, actually, with a cut from the CD. It's called The Nearness of You. Any of you who know jazz standards will know this tune. And on this album, playing with Graham, are three other remarkable musicians: John Clayton on bass, Jeff Hamilton on drums, and Tamir Handelman on piano. And they're all featured in these cuts. So coming up, The Nearness of You, and following that, my interview with Graham. Thank you.
So I am here with Graham Dechter at the Newport Jazz Party, and Graham is an absolutely wonderful guitar player with amazing good taste. And having worked all day and being exhausted, he has still agreed to talk to me, which is very, very sweet. I do a series of interviews called Anatomy of an Artist. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Although you don't look very old, it does seem like you're making this life with your guitar. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Yes, that's what it looks like. Okay, so I always ask the same question, and that is, how did it happen? How did it get started? How did you find it? How did it find you?
Well, I was born into a musical family. My mother is a vocalist, and she has a rich background of musical theater. So a lot of the songs that, you know, jazz musicians commonly play, you know, the standard Tin Pan Alley tunes, you know, I heard those from a very early age. And my dad, he's an arranger and an orchestrator. His name's Brad Dechter. And so I was very blessed to be brought up in that environment.
Yeah. It's literally at your mother's knee, sort of, and your father's, right?
Yeah,
right. Okay, so there's singing in the house, and there's playing in the house, and all that, but that doesn't mean that you would necessarily become a musician. So how did it happen to you?
You know, it was a very natural thing. You know, my dad and my mom tell me stories about how when I was, you know, literally just, you know, 2 or 3 years old, my dad would, where I'd be playing the piano or he'd be playing some records of, you know, Charles Mingus or Duke Ellington, and I would just start to sing along with those, you know, the records or whatever he was playing on the piano, and it just was something that I was just sort of naturally drawn to, and I never really thought about it. Just something about being a musician, not that I thought about, you know, making a living at the age of, you know, 2 or 3 or 5 or whatnot, but just something about doing music, you know, just came really naturally to me, and it wasn't something that I sort of set out or planned to do. It was just something that happened.
It was always there.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, I started studying piano formally when I was about 5 years old, and that didn't go too well because whatever the teacher assigned me, I never brought in. I brought in my own thing. You know, he would assign me, you know, some Bach, something or other. But I didn't bring that in. I was really into film music when I was young because my dad, you know,
he was playing at the house.
He was
right?
In that. Yeah, I was in the industry, and I loved especially the scores of John Williams. And I So instead of bringing Bach into the lessons, I would bring in, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark or something, you know, written by John Williams or, you know, one of the famous film composers, and the teacher didn't like that, so that lasted for about 6 months.
The teacher didn't like that?
Well, he was very kind of, you know, my way or the highway. I don't think he knew how to deal with someone
right?
who wasn't,
box.
Yeah, going by his program. So I stopped that, but I went to this Montessori school where they had a violin teacher come in, and she was great. Her name was Carol Kirsten, and I actually started playing violin, and I actually got kind of serious about that. I did that from the time I was 5 until I was 15.
Are we talking about classical violin?
Yeah, classical, and I played a lot in orchestra. And actually, one of the things that I wanted to be from, you know, an early age was a film composer. You know, from
just like Dad.
Like Dad, or, you know, and just listening to those scores, and, you know, just a love for movies, and the, you know, the combination, the marriage of the two, and I really wanted to do that, and, you know, of course, playing violin and being in orchestra really helped, you know, expose me to how a lot of, you know, the orchestration was done, and, you know.
Yeah, you hear everybody, what everybody's playing.
Yeah,
right,
and
right,
you
right.
see, and you see it too, you know, the visual aspect, you know, helps you sort of put the pieces together. So, you know, I wanted to do that for a while, and I did, you know, compose classical music for a while, around the time I was 12, I found this guitar sitting around in this classroom at the school I was at, and I just sort of started to play it just for fun, just as like an outlet, you know, something that I could do that wasn't me practicing, you know,
wasn't
my
serious.
Scales. Yeah, you know, it was just for fun, and you know, I started doing that more and more, and you know, it really was the first and only instrument that I chose to do myself. It wasn't something that, you know, my parents said, oh, you're going to play violin or you're going to take piano lessons. You know,
right.
It was just something that I just picked up, and I just sort of, you know, had this kind of thing for. And you know.
You know, this is an interesting point that you make. I mean, it's clearly clear that you were a musician from the beginning, that in the sense that music captured you, spoke to you, you know, it moved you, you know. So there was all. So that it looks like there was never a question about that. It's a, you know, you started to sing early, right? I mean, you were going to make music in some way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then to sing. It's just so interesting that, you know, guitar was the first instrument that I chose. That didn't come, you know, to me for me, but, you know, right? It's just an interesting way to talk about it. Do you think that was an important thing that in a way, as much as you are your parent's son, that you were making a statement that in this way, this is mine?
Yeah, you know, it kind of felt like that a little bit. It was just, and like any great thing, you know, whether it be, you know, a song that you're writing or, you know, a friend that you make or, you know, a relationship that you enter into, it just sort of starts happening naturally.
Spontaneously.
Yeah, and with guitar, it sort of happened that way. It wasn't like, you know, my parents telling me, you're going to be a guitar player and you're going to take lessons. In fact, I played guitar for about 4 years from the time I was 12 until I was 16. And, you know, I didn't take any lessons.
And in the meanwhile, you're still playing violin and you're in the orchestra, right?
And composing and doing all that as well. But it wasn't until I was about 16 years old that I formally started taking guitar lessons, but I think in hindsight it was very important that I had those 4 years of just figuring certain things out
yes.
on my own. And, you know, that's one of the things about jazz education and just music education in general. I feel like in a lot of instances, in most instances that I've, you know, come across in school and whatnot, it's gotten a little bit clinical, and I think that students aren't given the room to sort of experiment and do certain things on their own. You know, the way I play the guitar is completely different from the way, you know, someone else plays the guitar. And that's great, you know, and I think for jazz especially, that's the way we develop our own individual voice and our own individual way of doing things. And for someone to say, "Oh, you're holding the guitar wrong," or you're not using the right technique. Well, you know, my technique, it might be the best technique for me. It might
yes.
not be the best technique for someone else. So it's a very personal thing. So,
and also, I mean, forgive me, but when you're playing by yourself, you play what you hear, what's coming from you, not what other people tell you is right. You know, you play through scales in this way. You play, I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this, you can correct me. But
well, you know, it's part of that, but for me, especially getting into jazz, it was the records. It was those records where, I would listen to, Duke Ellington's, take the A-Train, and, instead of, having someone, give me a piece of sheet music and, wait, learn this tune. It wasn't like that at all. It's like, oh, wow, what is that? And it's like, oh, how do I play it on the guitar? And, how do I take that information and put it onto the guitar? And it was more organic in that way.
Yes.
And I think, and that's something that, my, one of the people that I play with and, he was he is a huge mentor to me, and I play in his band, John Clayton. His whole philosophy is just learning by rote like that, and not using music, to really just learn by ear and take things off records, And I think I just sort of I did that naturally, from the beginning.
Yeah.
And that it was more enjoyable to me than,
this is how you do it.
Yeah, and I find that any time I put any sort of restriction or, set of guidelines or rules on the, on the way I learn music, it's less enjoyable. So I think it's just better to do it naturally.
Is that who you are generally?
Yes. In a way, I can be that way. I think as I've gotten older, things you have to deal with, you have more responsibilities and whatnot, and to find, the time to practice and to make that time very productive, you kind of have to, you have to be very structured with it. So I guess I'm a little bit more concerned with that aspect of things now than, when I was
a kid.
Very young, where you don't really have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Right. You have to make space for it, so you have to be more disciplined? Is that what you're talking
about? Yeah, so I guess I think about how I'm going to approach something and, how long it's going to take and, how much time I have before I have to learn, X amount of tunes for a certain gig that I have coming up or, so I'm a little more inhibited in that way where, because if it were up to me, I would just take, 5 years to learn something because I just love,
You love the process.
Yeah. So.
Oh, so this is really kind of interesting. So you have to now do this thing that you wouldn't do, that wouldn't be your first choice in order to make a living. Right? Did you understand what I mean? To learn certain tunes and, to do in...
Well, I mean, no, I love doing that. It's just, say if I have to learn, 10 tunes, I might take, just 2 months just really getting into one tune,
Yeah, right.
I guess in a way, but I think ultimately those deadlines and those,
They get you moving.
They get you moving, and that's the only way things get done.
Right.
And even though it can be uncomfortable at times, and it can be stressful at times, especially when you have something coming up with people that you...
Yeah, you're going to get up there with them and you need to play
it. You really need to know what you're doing, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of dedication, and a lot of the work is not always... It's not like, oh, I'm creating, some composition, mine that I've just, spent months and months working on. It's like, oh, I really need to learn these 5 tunes, the next, day or then the next 5 hours.
Right.
Or the next hour, really. Sometimes you'll get together with people and say, hey, what do you want to play? It's like, oh, let's play this tune and that tune. It's like, oh, I don't know it. And, they teach it to you right on the spot. So you really need to get those skills happening. And for me, it's really made me stronger as a musician. I think, all jazz musicians, who are really, doing it and really playing, are put into that situation where you just have to learn on the spot.
Right.
It's
not like here. I mean, my God, what would you do if you couldn't?
Exactly. Yeah.
There's not a whole hell of a lot of preparation here.
No. Really most of this, with the exception of a couple bands, is just put together. I mean, granted, one of the things that everyone needs, to people coming up as a jazz musician like myself, we need to learn the tunes that are, played commonly.
Right.
But
there are a lot of them that are played commonly.
There are a lot of them. And, then there's inevitably going to be, a song here and there that you don't know.
Right.
So you have to rely upon, you know, your years of training and of actually...
And your ears.
And your ears, yeah, you know. Well, it really just, it comes from, you know, I find that, you know, you learn more and more tunes and you see these patterns and, you know, certain chord progressions, and then they become instantly recognizable.
Right.
And that allows you to go on and...
To wing it.
Yeah, to wing it and play a tune that you never played before. But I guess wrapping up what we were talking about, having those deadlines and having the pressure... it makes you perform better and makes you stronger as a musician.
Yeah.
And that's something I've been, just sort of thrown into, you know, especially in the last few years, and, you know, start working professionally and, you know, playing with really, you know, incredible musicians, you know.
So it's going well for you.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that, you know, really just, I think it's the thing that plagues all artists, but it's a good thing, it's a blessing and a curse, you know, all at the same time, is that you're always you know, dissatisfied with what you're doing. You know, like you're always wanting to reach further and get better. And, you know, I always feel like I'm 10 steps behind where I'm supposed to be. But that's, ironically, that's the thing that keeps me going.
Keeps you going, right?
So,
forgive me, how old are you?
I'm 24.
24. It's pretty young.
I guess so.
I'm sorry. What I'm thinking is you have a lot of time to do that, to get where you want to go.
Well, you know, that's funny. I don't know if this is just, you know, who I am, you know, or if it's like a kind of like a fear-based thing or whatever. You know, I always think to myself, you know, God, I really just don't have a lot of time to accomplish all the things that I want to accomplish in my playing, and whatever, writing, certain things that I want to do musically. I always feel like, you know, I'm at a shortage for time, I always have to be just plugging away at it. But
my mother used to say there aren't enough hours in the day. And I remember when I was a kid, I thought, what was she talking about? There are plenty of hours in the day. Mm-hmm. But now I know what she meant.
Yeah, and I feel exactly the same way. And really, you know, the whole thing about, you know, that I mentioned before about being organized and really, you know, when you have that time, you know, when you're not, obviously when you're not playing with people, but
yeah, when
you
you're not
time,
working.
When you're not working, you know, you really, that's when you really work. You know, going to the gig, that's the fun part. That's the part where you get to let loose and, you know, obviously it's, you know, it's, you have to concentrate, you have to be fully in it, you know, fully present. But that's the fun part. That's the payoff for all the work that you do leading up to that, you know, which is practicing and when you have that time to practice, you know, it's really important to be disciplined about it and, you know.
So are you still wanting to write?
Oh yeah, that's one of the things that I'm wanting to do more of, and you know, I released an album last year, or actually it was 2 years ago, the end of 2009, and the CD is called Right on Time, and it has Jeff Hamilton, John Clayton, and Tamir Handelman on the CD, and that CD was all standards. And you know, they were standards that I had mostly arranged. Tamir did a couple arrangements, and my dad actually wrote the title track for the album. It's, you know, Right on Time. And for this next record that I'm doing, we're recording in August. I'm doing some more original tunes for that, along with the standards as well.
Right.
But I really want to start, you know, just, you know, developing my voice more in that regard.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, any other, do you still want to write for film, or has that...
You know, I'm not sure I want to write for film. I would just like to maybe, to at some point, you know, reopen that door of writing orchestral music, you know, because, I mean, that stuff is just so amazing, it's so deep, and the only thing for me right now is just it just takes so much time to do that. And right now I'm very much focused on being a player and you know, focusing on playing jazz, and that's sort of my love, you know, for now and forever. So, you know, if ever, you know, I have the time to do that and, you know, there's a lull in my schedule, you know, maybe I'll explore that. But it's not on the immediate list of to-dos right now. You know,
it's interesting. I was just thinking, you know, your mother, a vocalist, but you said mostly theater music?
Well, she was, Yeah, she you know, as a when she was in her 20s, you know, before I was born, she would tour around in, you know, in plays and musicals. Mm-hmm.
And your father film music, so not jazz. So how did that happen?
Well, actually, my dad's original love was, you know, jazz music. Okay. And he actually started off, and I failed to mention that before, he started off as a player. He played with Bill Berry's big band, and he played with Toshiko, and at a certain point, the writing just sort of took over for him. And he still plays, you know, and sometimes he gigs, you know, here and there. Sometimes I'll play, you know, gigs with him, which is really
great.
It's a lot of fun. It's really cool to do that. But
okay, so the jazz is.
So the jazz is definitely there. Yeah, I mean, because he was, you know, he was playing all these jazz records as a kid, mm-hmm. you know, or as when I was.
I understand.
Yeah,
I understand.
And so jazz was always there, and it's funny, you know, I never really thought about actively pursuing that until I was, you know, in high school. It's not that I didn't like jazz, I loved it, it's just, I thought to myself, God, you know, I could never do what they're doing, you know, it just seems too complicated, how can you create, you
out of
know,
nothing.
Out of nothing, but, you know, the more I got into it, the more I realized that it's not,
out of nothing,
it's not out of nothing, it's just, you know, just hours and hours and hours of practice and, you know, listening and playing and just doing, you know.
And hearing what other people do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. And, you know, it's one of my teachers, Bill Dobbins, he was, I went to the Eastman School of Music for a minute. He's a guy who's, he's kind of like an encyclopedia of knowledge when it comes to, I mean, just knowing all the recordings and all, everything. I mean, he's kind of a cut and dry guy. You know, I respect the hell out of him. And he said something to a class, you know, that I was in, said, you know, this stuff isn't magic. It's just, you know, you have to put in the time and the work. And, you know, but, you know, I think it is magic. You know, there's moments where, you know, it's just, how is that possible?
Right.
You know?
Right. And what you're doing is not anything you heard or anything you practiced. It just suddenly is there.
Well, no, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's stuff that you cultivate and stuff that you develop, you know. Just is you're always developing. It's stuff that you work on, mm-hmm. you know.
It's
a language.
So there are no moments of where did that come from?
Well, I mean, there are, but that comes from being in the moment and just playing.
That's what I meant.
But really, it's a language. You know, it's not gibberish. You know?
No, I understand. So know. Once you, it's like every once in a while, I will make up a word. It doesn't actually exist, but it makes sense to me, right? Mm-hmm. It's a combination of two words in the language I know.
Kind of slang, right?
Right, yeah. Right. But I've invented that word, but it's based on the language I know. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. That definitely occurs in jazz.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not, you know, meaning to say that, you know, there isn't, you know, true, you know, improvisation.
Improvisation, right.
But a lot of, you know, a lot of, most of what I think jazz musicians do is play stuff that they've played before, except it's different when you play it, you know, depending on the context.
Right.
You know, it's always different. It's always fresh. It's always new because each time you go to play or to improvise, you're composing in real time.
Yes. And also, what other people are playing has an impact on you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's exactly my point.
Right.
You know, you can say, you know, you can say the same word in, you know, 10 different situations, it's going to have different meaning.
Different meaning, yeah, you know? Yeah.
So therefore it is different, and it is new, and it is improvised.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's wonderful, isn't it?
It's a mind trip. but it is really wonderful, and, you know, not only that, it's just, you know, being a part of what really is just a big family.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff Hamilton, who's, you know, probably my biggest mentor, and you know, he's on my album, and you know, he means so much to me in so many different ways, you know. And but you know, what he said is really true. This is a family, mm-hmm. And just, you know, I just feel honored to be a part of that family.
Yes.
You know, and you know, that along with the music is just, it's just a wonderful experience. You know.
Wow. Okay. So really, the question I'd like to ask is, you know, having decided to dedicate your life to this, is there anything you want to say about it? And of course, in a way, that's all of what we've been talking about. So, but if there's any other thing that you want to say about what it means really to have given your life to this music, this would be the moment.
Oh boy, I feel the pressure right now. Gosh. Well, I feel incredibly blessed and fortunate to be, you know, amongst, you know, my heroes, people that I, you know, listened to growing up, and you know, just really wonderful, beautiful people. You know, I wouldn't want to be in any other situation.
No. And you know? And anyone who's heard you play knows that this is where you belong.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You are welcome. Thank you so much, Graham.
My pleasure.
Graham Dechter at 24, where he belongs. It's a wonderful story, because it is a story of someone who was allowed to discover himself. Clearly a musician by the time he was two, still he had to come to the guitar by himself. He had to pick it up to fool around. He had to find that the one he chose, was the one he was going to give his life to. It's inspiring to me, actually, to hear a story, although I've heard a number of them lately, of parents who have the good sense and kids who had the good fortune to let be what is. Not to say, listen, a child of ours has to do this, or that's not okay, or, I mean, in this particular instance, because he started out with piano, and then he went to violin, you know, his parents might have questioned his choice of guitar. But of course they didn't. They let him be. And so at 24, he knows what he wants to do. He's well on his way to doing it. And if you were listening to The Nearness of You, you know how well he does it. And so now I'm going to play another cut from his album before I close down the show. And this is the Jobim tune, Wave. Thank you. I do love it when I interview musicians, because I get to hear all this glorious music over and over as I'm working on the show. And you get to hear it over and over if you want to listen to the show again. And if you want to listen to the show again, all you have to do is go up on my website, thelinshow.com, and you'll find the podcast there. Podcast for this show and every other show I've done for the last 3-some years. If you have any questions you want to ask me, that's where to go and do it. And I think I'm going to have time just to play a tiny bit of another cut from this album before the show actually ends. So before I do that, I need to thank, as always, the wonderful, remarkable, terrific Josh Hackney, who just built me another computer. Of course, I haven't learned to use it, but Josh will teach me. So as I always say, if you need help with computers, with recording, with engineering, with sound, with electronics, Josh is the guy. And you can find him on my website as well. Just go up there to thelinshow.com, say I want Josh, and I will get him for you. So, as always, I hope that you heard something you can use in this show, or at least something that you just enjoyed, or something you didn't know but learned, or something that you knew but forgot, something that will bring you back, because next week I will be here, same time, same station, and you know I hope you will be too. So I think we're going to try and go out on the jazz standard in a mellow tone. This is Graham Dechter, Jeff Hamilton, Tamir Handelman, and John Clayton from Graham's first album called Right on Time.
I'm getting older. My hair is turning
figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. See that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get, I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper, I may have gotten